This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Acclaimed Fringe Theatre veteran TJ Dore was in Nanaimo in mid-July to perform his latest show called Marathon as a fundraiser for the Nanaimo Fringe Festival. The Nanaimo Fringe runs from August 14th to 24th. Marathon focuses primarily on TJ Dore's evolving understanding of the Enneagram personality system, an ancient typology used in both business and spiritual contexts for increasing self-awareness and understanding.
TJ Dore is sometimes called the Lord of the Fringe. He's written and performed 14 monologues. He's helped create many more solo shows, plays, theater pieces, and this has happened over the course of 20 years of touring close to 100 fringe festivals across Canada and abroad. I was at TJ's performance of Marathon, and the show was followed by an extended and very interesting Q&A, which we recorded for our broadcast today. I want to point out that we've edited up TJ's comments for time. First clip, how has TJ changed as a result of his work with the Enneagram, and how is working with others different from working alone?
One big change I didn't talk about in the show at all is that I've stopped getting stoned. That's a line I actually sometimes throw into the show, because I came to realize that I was, since my late teens basically, I was getting high on marijuana to self-medicate for social anxiety. Because marijuana makes a lot of people quiet and self-conscious, is the exact opposite for me. Makes me very talkative. So that was social lubricant. Mm-hmm. But it also puts me in a different space than everybody else. And I felt protected by that. And I've stopped doing it. And the last few festivals I've done, I have felt a lot more engaged. And here's another big thing, is it especially helps when I've done a show like this and people have this deep look into who I really am. When they interact with me off stage, that interaction is completely predicated on them seeing the real me. And I feel it. And I feel accepted. And I can have a real conversation with them, even if we're just talking about what comics were reading, much less about that person's deep issues in their soul. The real challenge for me is if I can sustain that in an environment where that's not the case. If I'm at a dinner party with a bunch of people I don't know. Or if I'm in some situation where I'm not the star. So that's a challenge, but it's not insurmountable, and I believe that in a way that I never did before. So I'm taking baby steps forward. I think it would be too absolutist to say I'm changed. I'm different than I was before. But certain things have changed and are changing, and I can feel it, and I like it. If it's a good combination, it's awesome. And just 2 weeks ago, I finished co-writing a two-person show with another person. And there was a third person in the room kind of giving feedback, and there was a director who were consulting by Skype every day. And I enjoyed it. I looked forward to it. So it's not like all collaborations are good. It depends on the collaboration. But I'm open to it in ways that I never was before. And when it's going well, there's nothing like it. And I spent a month in April in Charlotte, North Carolina, directing a show. And I hung out with the cast. We went bowling. We went to a movie. We went to a restaurant. And here I am bragging about it, right? But that I also saw as part of the process. Because the rapport between the actors and the rapport between me and the actors was critical to that show. So that's something I never would have appreciated before. And now I understand that's part of it. And it's not like I had to drag myself to do it. I initiated all that, and I really enjoyed it. So I look forward to more of that in the next ensemble things I work on.
We're sharing some of TJ Dawes' comments from the Q&A after his recent performance of Marathon in Nanaimo. Here's the second clip. I asked him about his concept of creative practice, something he's both spoken and written about.
The focus of the workshop that I want to teach is about developing a personal creative practice. In our culture, we tend to outsource artistic creation to experts because they're better. And, you know, instead of just trying to play a song on a guitar, I can hear a much better song by listening to an album of somebody who's a professional musician. But I think the real function of art is not to make you rich or famous. It is to let what's inside of you come out. And that would be valuable for anyone and everyone, whether they consider themselves to be an artist or artistic or not. So I think it's a good idea for everybody to have a practice whose specific function is to have something in their life that they do that they have no ambition for that thing. And for me, that thing is music. I'm a pretty decent guitarist, but I've never played guitar on stage, and I don't want to. I don't write songs. The best I can do is do covers, and I'm fine with it. And what I've the very difficult thing for somebody with a social blind spot is asking for help. So I now take guitar lessons, which is a way of asking for help. I found a teacher on Craigslist and said, can you teach me this specific song? And he could, and he did, and I liked it. So I kept going back to him. And I just play songs around the living room with my girlfriend. She'll sing, and I'll fingerpick, and I'll sing too, and it's fun. But I think that's something everybody could benefit from, you know, if they're a professional artist, to have some practice that isn't part of their profession. It's a very difficult thing to do, yes. Because if you've ever read the books of Stephen Pressfield, have you ever heard of him? Stephen Pressfield's a novelist, and I'm reading a novel of his about ancient Greece right now. But he's written 3 books on the creative practice. They're amazing. One's called The War of Art. It's very popular. A lot of people know this book, Do the Work, and Going Pro, or Turning Pro. And his big theme is resistance. Now, anytime you want to do something that's good for you and or the world, like write a novel, or lose some weight, or start a youth activity center in the slum, you'll have a burst of inspiration, and very soon after that, you'll have the equal and opposite force of resistance that wants, above all else, to stop you from doing that thing. Don't do it. And we'll come up with all kinds of really seemingly convincing reasons why you should not do this and never do this. And it's not like this voice of resistance means that you don't have what it takes to do that thing. Everybody has this. Salman Rushdie has this voice. Margaret Atwood has this voice. Beethoven had this voice. They just learned how to deal with it, how to accept it and say, thank you for your concern. I'm going to do my work today anyway. So that's another part of developing a practice, is just understanding you're up against some serious shit when you want to do that. And it's so odd, because seemingly this thing that you want to do is something that you enjoy that will make your life better. So what's with the part of you that wants to stop that from happening? But it's there, and it's powerful, and it must be contended with. I think it's the ego. I think it's our fear. I think it's the impulse to protect ourselves. And like I said, with regards to the sexual instinct, when you're creating art of any kind, you're going into the unknown, and you're making yourself vulnerable. Those are terrifying things. So of course your protective mechanism wants to protect you from terrifying things. But there's a time that you can say to that thing, well, I'm not really protecting myself by stopping myself from spending some time each week sketching that I'm never going to show anyone. That's totally fine to do. In fact, that's a good thing for me to do. So thank you for your concern, but I think I'm going to do this anyway. The ego is a powerful thing. And I had a teacher tell me once that the ego was basically like Satan. Brilliant, powerful, insidious, patient, and knows exactly where your weak points are. And will always come back, no matter how much you vanquish it. And this show was originally like 4 times longer when I wrote the first draft. And I had to cut to get it down to the length it is now. And one of the major themes in that version was about comic books. And in the last 5 years, I've started reading superhero comic books for the first time since adolescence. And I really like them. And one of the things about them is that the nemesis always comes back. Doesn't matter how many times Batman catches the Joker and puts him in prison. He always escapes. Doesn't matter how many times the hero kills the villain. The villain comes back from the dead. Just like the ego. Just like Satan. And the fact that there actually was somebody in a real event in my life called Satan, who was like a nemesis, was like this gift from the gods. I can't make this shit up. But that's exactly it. It's the ego is your nemesis. And it would always be back. And something that was in that draft of the show was that the difference between the hero and the villain is that the villain wants to win, and I'm not making this up, this is a quote from somebody else, a great comic book writer. The villain wants to win for the villain's sake, because the villain believes he's the person to rule the world, or he should have the amount of money, or the girl, or whatever it is the villain's after. The hero wants to win for the villain's sake. The hero doesn't want to kill the villain. He or she wants to reform the villain, to show him the error of his ways. Because even if that villain wins, his prize won't satisfy him for long. He'll become dissatisfied with it. So to rehabilitate the villain, which is what our relationship needs to be with the ego. It was fatuous of me to think that I could vanquish my ego just by working on my social blind spot for a summer. I need to come into a relationship with this part of me and accept that this will always be there. There will always be hurdles that I have to jump in my life. And that that's okay. And in fact, doing that will make me work harder and will make me better at those things.
In our third and final clip from T.J. Dawes' Q&A in Nanaimo, I asked him about his experiences with the plant-based medicine Iboga, and he also speaks about the creative process.
That was also part of the original draft of the show. So ayahuasca is the plant medicine that I talked about in my previous show, medicine. Iboga is the plant medicine that was in the original draft of this show. There just wasn't room to keep it in. Iboga is kind of the African equivalent. It's the bark from the root of a bush that grows in West Africa. And a derivative from it is called Ibogaine. Has anybody ever heard of this? Ibogaine, or Ibogaine, has the astonishing property of interrupting an opiate addiction. So you can be the biggest heroin addict in the world, you take one dose of Ibogaine, and you have no withdrawal from heroin if you stop shooting up. None. Withdrawal, supposedly, is one of the most harrowing things a person can go through. You're vomiting, it's like the worst flu you've ever had the last 3 months. Ibogaine, you get none of them. But if you don't deal with the underlying emotional issues that made you need to seek oblivion with heroin in the first place, you're probably going to go back on it after a number of months. Anyway, it's also used in other ceremonies, and I participated in a ceremony last October in Seychelles that involved ingesting a large amount of this wood. It was in capsule form, and it was a 36-hour ceremony. And it's much harder to describe than ayahuasca. So that's another reason it didn't make the final cut of the show. It's just harder to tell the story about it. But I went through some kind of bad shit last summer that wasn't even that dramatic. It was just the peace that I had disappeared, and I started getting stoned again, and I was irritable, and I just needed to do something. And Ibogaine seemed like something to do, or Iboga seemed like something to do that might have some answers, and it did. And they're not answers I can quantify. But ever since then is when I stopped getting high. And I started opening up even more. And I felt this peace that I never had before. And I started meditating, never having done that before. And I found things that normally kick my stress right up, like when a computer doesn't do what I want it to. Man, when you're looking at that little spinning multicolored pinwheel on a Mac, so often that's when I turn into Donald Duck. Just like, what the fuck, what is wrong with this? Not anymore. Now I just seem to look at it and think, okay, it's not doing what I want it to. Why not? I asked it to do this, but it didn't do that. Okay, maybe I forgot. Oh, I forgot to do that, and then I adjust that, and then it works. Or it doesn't work. Okay, there must be something else. Okay, let's do that. It becomes a math problem. So what they told us at the Iboga ceremony was that you will feel the benefits of this maybe in a week, maybe in 5 years, but you will feel it. I don't know that I can attribute any good thing that's happened to me since then to that definitively. I've never had one moment where the holy wood has spoken to me. But I have felt a lot better since October than I was previous. So I'm very grateful for that. And if anybody's interested in that ceremony, you can give me contact. Because Iboga is actually not illegal in Canada, even though ayahuasca is. But it's interesting stuff, and yeah, it's worth investigating. The Iboga ceremony still happened in West Africa, or like the two shamans that conducted the ceremony I was part of, they're from England. They're two white guys, Sean and Steve. And they conduct retreats in Seychelles twice a year. It was incredible. It involved a full day fast before, and then you're up all night doing more and more and more Iboga. Crazy. I guess it's supposed to heal you in whatever way you need to be healed. Maybe. Ayahuasca is often done multiple times in a person's life. I've known people who've done it more than 100 times. Iboga is usually only ever done once. It's considered a death and rebirth. Although some people have done it more than once. There was one woman there who was doing it a second time. Gabor Mate has done it twice. I found that one as I was working. And that's another thing about the whole creative process. It's quite often we tell ourselves that I can't do a given thing because I don't feel inspired, I don't have a good enough idea. 90% of the good ideas I've had have come to me while I'm working. When I put myself in the zone, in the arena, then that's when the good things come, rather than when I just wait for them to come and then be perfect on the page. So that totally came not even on the page, but as I was rehearsing.
Yeah.
And I found that, because that wasn't in the original script, but just like that image that I'm peeling the onion, like, just like, yeah, that's how I get that across. Totally.
Yeah.
And that's what that moment was like.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
Yeah. That's something people have responded to a lot as I've done this.
Yeah, and that idea of capturing a thought, I've never heard anybody articulate that. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what it is.
Before you change it.
Yeah, I love that. It's like a comic strip bubble in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, oh, I see it. You know, getting in there. And, yeah, it's really cool.
Another teacher, not a personal teacher, but just somebody whose books I've read, Ken Wilber, he's a philosopher, talks about how there's all kinds of different level lines. A person can be really good at basketball and really bad at cooking. That kind of thing. The most important line of them all is cognition, which isn't necessarily having a PhD in 10 different subjects. It's simply the ability to see what is. And if you have that, that's the best key to raising any other level. If you can simply see what is happening right now, and that kind of thing, the thought that you had that you wish you hadn't had is very hard to see.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be the person that thought that embarrassing thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that flawed person that has this flawed perception. But if you can see it and look at it and acknowledge it, that is a huge step. Yeah. Simply to see that it is. And I'm not going to deny it. Anyway, thank you so much for staying here.
TJ Dore is an award-winning and published writer, performer, and director. You can find him online at tjdore.ca. That's D-A-W-E. The Nanaimo Fringe Festival runs from August 14th to 24th, 2014, and tickets are now on sale. You can find out more about Nanaimo Fringe Festival online at nanaimofringe.com.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.